Hey, it's Scott Petrek, and we're back with another episode of the Brown Zone Coverage Podcast. A lot has happened since we last convened. The off-season program began, and some big names talked to the media. Perrion Winfrey was arrested in Texas, and the draft is less than a week away. Here to discuss, as always, is Dave Chudowski of GO, the WKYC Morning News. How was vacation, Chud?
Scott, it was great. Good to get away. Always fun to went down to Florida with the family. So good to get away. Back at it now. But I think that's a great question. I'll give you that. How was my vacation? I think what all the people out there want to know is how much golf have you gotten in since last time we talked, and how's your golf game?
That is a good question, Chud. Well, I played 9 holes Wednesday, 18 Thursday, and I played once last week, once or twice last week. So, you know how it is around here, Chud. You got to take advantage when the weather cooperates in April. I've seen the forecast, and it doesn't look good after yesterday. So I made sure to get out Wednesday and Thursday, and I'm hitting it okay. So decent start to the year, I would say.
Yeah, because the thing about you as a golfer is you battle the weather and the Brown schedule.
That's a good point. Yeah. So even let's say even the weather was good next at the end of next week, the draft would limit what I could do. Even though Thursday I could probably get out because the Browns aren't going to do anything. But yeah, it's always juggling. What the Browns are doing. In fact, I was trying to get a golf trip, and you know how it is. You get three guys, three other guys, you're trying to figure out the calendars, and then you got Browns availability and, training camp and whatever. So it's a little tight, but you know how it is. When I get a window, I find the golf course.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, we're going to get into, like you said, it's a busy week. We're going to get into all that. But first, it just feels weird. Like our Super Bowl has been taken away from us. Another draft without a first round pick. I mean, this is what we live for as Browns fans. The draft night's our night. And then not only do we not have a first round pick, we have to wait until the third round.
Yeah, the vibe is definitely different. And, my fans got some experience with this last year, right? They didn't have a first round pick because of the Deshaun Watson trade. But it was so fresh because the Watson trade was in the middle of March, right? It went down March 18th. And there was still a lot of kind of reaction to that, fallout from that, where I think that eclipsed some of the draft. Plus, the Browns went into last year's draft having a second round pick. They wound up trading it and didn't draft until the third round, and they took cornerback Martin Emerson Jr. But at least they had a second round pick. So you could think, if you're a fan or if you're media, you could think about, okay, who's going to be available at the second round pick? Now, if you're not drafted until number 74, which is when they're slated to draft, now they could always move up, but I don't expect them to move up a long way. It's just a long wait. I don't think there's any way they draft Thursday night. So then it's when do they finally get on the clock Friday? It's just a different vibe from all the years past, like you referenced, not having a first round pick, not being in the top 10 or top five. And I think it feels even different than last year, given a couple of the circumstances.
We'll talk a little bit more about the draft. I'm sure we're gonna have something next week to do a little more in-depth preview, but we'll end this podcast with something on the draft. So let's make people wait for that, and let's get back into this past week because we got the off-season program going now, right?
Yeah,
Back in the building.
they started Monday. And obviously it's voluntary, so not everybody's there. Kevin Stefanski gets a little funky saying who's there, who's not, just because a lot of times guys are in and out too. Miles Garrett was here this week. I would not expect Miles Garrett to be at every session of the offseason program. But he was here this week. I think it's a good sign if some of your best players or your best players are here at the start of the offseason program. So it began Monday. We had some availability Tuesday. Talked to Coach Kevin Stefanski, talked to Deshaun Watson, Myles Garrett, Amari Cooper, and Greg Newsome the second. And those are some big names to trot out, right? Not only have, we all know those names. And then Greg Newsome had been in the news recently, changed agents. There was conjecture. There's a report that he refuted emphatically about his desire to be traded. So it was, I thought it was good. availability, you know, for the middle of April, you know, nothing's really going on. The guys aren't even practicing. They're just meeting and working out with the strength and conditioning staff. I thought there was a lot to come from that interview session on Tuesday.
All right, well, let's start with Greg Newsom then. And basically, you had mentioned about the report, and I don't want to put you on the spot Scott, it's a tough call because you have to do your job and you have to be correct. But is there part of you that has an opinion or a feeling of where this really stands? I mean, do you think he really wanted out, or do you trust him at face value where he says he wants to be here?
No, that's a great question, Sean. Let me give you both sides. He was adamant, right? Adamant on Twitter, adamant when we talked to him Tuesday that it never, and I asked him specifically, did the frustration ever get to the point where you thought about leaving? And he said, no. He said, from the day I arrived, I've always been a guy that wanted to be one place my whole career. Obviously, I'm paraphrasing. So that's the message he wants out there. And, you know, his agent, Drew Rosenhaus, and he changed agents for the third time. He's back with Drew Rosenhaus. He quickly got back to me, and you know how agents are, Chud. Sometimes you get them, sometimes you don't. So I texted Drew when I found out that Newsom went back to him, and I said, has he requested a trade? And quickly got back to me with, never did, happy to be here, and go ahead and write that. So that's certainly the message the camp wants out there. Now, is that message because they don't have any leverage, right? He's 2 years into a four-year deal, and the Browns have a fifth-year option they could pick up on his rookie contract? You know, that's the reality. But I want to believe Newsom. I don't have any reason not to believe him. But we know that he was not happy with his role last year. We know that when you change agents, that's one reason to change agents is because you're not happy with the person that's representing you. And maybe you think the new guy can help you change your situation. So connecting those dots, I understand connecting those dots. But I'm going to take Newsom for his word, or at his word. But I do understand the conjecture. Now, Newsom tried to make clear the reason he was unhappy with his role last year. It's not necessarily playing in the slot. It's playing a quasi linebacker role. And I think we could have a super long discussion because actually I talked to a former NFL defensive coordinator about for the draft this week, and we talked about the nickel position and how it's evolving and how it's so important. But an element of that is being a fit in the run game, and you're almost like a linebacker. And I think Greg just felt that he was asked to do that too much. Maybe you could have replaced him with a linebacker and he could have been outside, as opposed to being a nickel as much as the Browns were, and you're asking him to, you know, fit the run a lot for a guy that's not that big. So, he said, hey, I'm fine covering guys in the slot, right? Which is a tough position. Three-way goes, you have to be extremely quick. You have to be instinctual. He just didn't like the fact that he was asked to participate in the run defense from inside that much. So he was honest about that. Now the question is, what's Jim Schwartz, the new defensive coordinator, what does he have in mind for Newsom? Right? Is he going to ask him to do some of the same things? Is there a way for Newsom to play in the slot, but yet not be the quote-unquote linebacker as much as he was? It's going to be really fascinating to follow.
Let me give you possibly, and we're going to get off of this in a second, and I am totally making this up here. Yes. This is just me being the person that's going to maybe, you know, the voice of some people that might sit here and try to connect the dots, but of course this is not official. So he was upset, fired his agent, possibly wanted out, maybe talked to Schwartz, maybe decided things won't be so bad, I want to stay. Maybe that's it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's completely feasible, right? And if you throw that in with the Rosenhaus talked to Andrew Berry, and Andrew Berry said, hey, we're not trading your guy, that could all be in the mix there. Now,
Right.
Now, Greg wants it out there that it never came to that point for him, that he always wanted to be here, He adores Cleveland, right? That's his quote. I adore Cleveland. But yes, we've been around professional sports, and in other cases, those are certainly factors and certainly scenarios that have played out. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean that Newsom's scenario was similar to that, but that scenario and the ones we've talked about certainly have crossed my mind.
Yeah, no question. All right, I could have led with Deshaun Watson. We started out individually wise with Newsom.
Sure.
Let's go to Watson now. That's the other. I mean, that's big. I mean, the fact that he talked on Tuesday. I don't know if people at home keep score, but in the media profession, for you, who's the everyday beat writer, and myself in television, not there every day, but I'm talking about him on TV. That's a big deal when he talks on a Tuesday like that.
It is. And I think it's somewhat common across the league for your quarterback to talk early in the offseason program. I'm trying to remember when Baker did and when he didn't. And you have to remember that, 2020 with the pandemic, the offseason program was non-existent, right? 2021, it wasn't the same. There's been, it's not apples to apples, but when it's Deshaun Watson, it's certainly newsworthy and noteworthy because we have not talked to him a ton, right? Once he started playing again, it became after game during the week. Before that, last offseason, with all the uncertainty and all the lawsuits hanging over him, he did not talk much. So for him to have his appearance as early as he could is certainly worth mentioning. He talked about it being night and day from year one to year two for him. He described last year as a whirlwind. And you know how I struggle with encapsulating everything with Deshaun Watson, right? It's so difficult because there's a million facets to it. So whirlwind doesn't feel like it has enough magnitude, right? Because you're talking about serious sexual misconduct allegations, an 11-game suspension, right? In which we didn't know until I think it was August 18th that it was officially going to be 11 games because it was, he agreed to that settlement. So, but if you take a step back, his point is taken that there was a lot going on for him last year, the trade, the new contract, switching teams, all the, his entire legal situation, new offensive system, all of that. And from a player perspective, I think that's mostly what he's, or I think that's what he's trying to encapsulate. For him, it was a lot going on. A year later, a lot of things have settled down, right? From a legal standpoint, there's two ongoing or pending civil lawsuits. That's it, right? There's no expectation that he faces any more discipline from the NFL. He's known Kevin Stefanski for a year plus. He knows a lot of his teammates. He's had guys down in Houston working out with him starting in February. So he feels more settled. The comfort level is higher. And for him and the organization, with that comes the expectation that he'll play that much better, which he needs to.
And this is maybe an unfair question, but, these are things we ask all the time, like kind of how his how he came across, like what did he seem more relaxed to you? Did you notice anything?
No, that's a good question, Chud. I would say not specifically. He certainly didn't seem tense or nervous.
Body language.
Maybe that's accurate. He did not. The only kind of off-field question he got was about, or legal question he got was about the two remaining cases. And he said, he's leaving that to his legal team. But he also said, I think he said, I'm healthy. I'm in a good spot. Like, he used that question to talk about how he felt like he was in a good mental state, right? A good mindset, which I think is interesting. from the cynic in me, my cynic side is not that huge, I don't think. But the cynic in me, he got asked about being in the community, right? Because he talked about being here for a year and, wanting to be kind of settled in Cleveland and part of the community. So he got asked about that. And he said that he had visited like a charity organization. It was Fatima, over by League Park. And he said, you know, not everything has to be on social media, right? Because it had gone under the radar. And then 2 days later, the next day or 2 days later, the Bronx tweeted out, right, his whole appearance down at Fatima. So I thought that was kind of funny, right? He's like, oh, everything doesn't have to be out there. And then, okay, well, but in case you missed it, here it is.
In case you missed it. Is there anything that we should be keeping our eye on legally that could still weigh in? I mean, is he in the clear as far as everything goes and playing this year? Or is there anything that could be a stumbling block?
I think from a playing perspective, he's fine. I think there would have to be completely new allegations for the NFL to step in. Now, there remains two civil lawsuits that have not been settled or finalized, right? Last year, he settled 23. There was one case remaining from the original set. There was a new one added in October. He was supposed to be deposed, but then there were scheduling issues. I don't know if he's eventually going to have to be deposed in the most recent suit or not, but I don't expect any of that to affect his offseason availability or season availability.
All right, let's move on to the other big name that talked, Myles Garrett. What was the headline coming out of there? Is the headline with Myles Garrett just about the Pro Bowl and his injury, or was there anything of more substance?
You know,
that's mostly what I saw.
Yeah, you know what, Chad? I think that's interesting. I thought that was a headline. I wrote about that specifically. But it also tied into the fact that he said the toe that he dislocated at the Pro Bowl, right? In February, he's going over the obstacle course. He does something to his foot. He thinks it's broken, winds up only being dislocated. He says it's still nagging him. Now, he doesn't expect it to bother him once the season gets going. But, you know, you're 2 months in. I think it's newsworthy. I think it's somewhat concerning that it's not completely healed. Like, he's still working out, right? We still see the off-season videos of Miles, doing his drills and lifting crazy weight and all that kind of stuff. So it's not like he's sitting at home waiting for the foot to get better. But it's still a factor. I think it bothers him that he's not 100%. He said the shoulder from the car accident is also nagging him, but he thinks that's going to be fine for the season as well. But then he said, he goes, I'm never going to do that again. I'm retired from obstacle course. He kind of ripped it, said nobody he talked to thought it was a good idea. They need to change, you know, the Pro Bowl events to make it better, was his opinion. The other thought from a football standpoint, or from a, you know, Browns football standpoint, you know, the contracts with Dalvin Tomlinson and then Obo, the defensive end, right, the D-tackle and D-end, they're long-term deals. Tomlinson's 4 years, Obo is 3 years. And so Miles got asked about, hey, does this feel like you finally have some consistency with you along the defensive line? Because for so long, outside of Larry Ogunjobi, who was drafted in the same class as Miles and played for 4 years and started for three and then left in free agency, it's been a pretty steady revolving door along the defensive line, right? Clowney signed back-to-back one-year deals. Before that, Olivier Vernon was here for, I think, 2 years. Sheldon Richardson was only here for a little bit of D-tackle. You had the 1 year where the Browns signed Malik McDowell and Malik Jackson, and they only spent 1 year as the starters at D-tackle. Last year, it was Taven Bryan was here for a year. Now he's gone. So Tomlinson should be here for a while. Obo should be here for a while. And I just thought it was interesting how Garrett talked about that. And he said, yeah, I hope we can build this long-term thing. And you add Jim Schwartz to it, and he wants to build his defense around that front four. And he said, he compared it to Philadelphia. He wants to be the Eagles, who for years had consistent guys up front, right? And now some guys would rotate out and you'd get older and they have new guys. But Brandon Graham and Fletcher Cox and Jernigan, and then they had Javon Hargrave for a long time and Sweat's there. And he said, opponents look at that front four and that D line and they fear them. And he goes, that's what we're trying to do. So I thought that was really interesting because you add a couple pieces, you add Jim Schwartz, and I think it kind of changes at least how Miles is hoping the Browns are perceived and how the defensive line plays. Yeah, and the last thing I wanted to say, Chad, about Garrett is he was asked about kind of his mindset. He has a kind of theme for every offseason. And he said, have some fun. And he went into the ups and downs of his career and how, you know, you have to be grateful. And I just think that was interesting for him to go there. I'm trying to make the most out of every moment I have here. And, you know, I think it encapsulates kind of Garrett's last year, right? He had that car accident in early in the season that really affected the rest of the season. I think it was – obviously it was a scary incident that affected him physically and mentally, and just his overall career, right? It's we know it's great. We know he's an all-pro, been a pro bowler, I think it's four times. But they haven't had the team success. He hasn't been that defensive player of the year like he wants. So I think he's trying to kind of evaluate all of it and look at the bright side and be grateful for it and then build off of that. And I just thought it was kind of an interesting sentiment.
It always seems like there's something that holds him back from just being the complete dominating season, you know, whether it's COVID or an accident or what it be. You know, yeah. We've seen greatness, but like it still feels like there's that even next level it could be overall.
I completely agree. And part of that is because the expectations are so great. Number one overall pick. And he has those expectations, and he's not been shy to talk about them, right? He wants to be in the Hall of Fame. He wants to be Defensive Player of the Year. He wants to take his team to Super Bowls. But when you set that bar so high and you fall short at all, right? He's got 16 sacks each of the last few years. That's phenomenal. But it just feels like there's one more piece. And the other part of that is because he's so talented and athletically gifted, you know there can be more.
Yeah. Let's move on to the injuries. Let's start with another big name that talked, Amari Cooper. And on Tuesday, he revealed that he had core muscle surgery in February.
Yeah. At the end of the season, he had been bothered. It started, I think, week 13, the Cincinnati week. Kind of, so it's Watson's second week back. And he was really limited after that. Now, you'd watch him play, and there'd be some plays where he'd run really fast. He had three touchdowns against the Commanders. And then there'd be plays where it was obviously bothering him, and he wouldn't practice that much. But he wanted to avoid surgery. At the end of the year, he's like, yeah, I hope I don't have to have it. Well, he waited a month after the season. It was still hurting him, so he had the surgery. Said he's feeling good. Everything's on schedule. The Browns are going to be careful with him. Obviously, there's no reason to hurry him back. I don't know if we'll see him on the field or how much we'll see him on the field in OTAs, in minicamp in May and June. But I would think he had surgery in February. By the time you get to training camp in July, I would expect him to be either at 100% or really close. It shouldn't linger into the season. Now, the only question there is how much chemistry can he build up with Watson if he's not on the field, right? He hasn't been able to go to Houston and throw with Watson because of the surgery. So you do need to get on the field at some point. But he's not worried about it, and you would assume that the surgery corrected it and it won't bother him this year.
Are there injuries to talk about?
Yeah, we went through Garrett. The other one that stood out to me, Chud, is JOK, right? Linebacker Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah. Like, we knew Sione Takitaki had the torn ACL. Anthony Walker Jr. had the torn quad tendon. Jacob Phillips had the torn pec, right? These are all the other linebackers that were on IR at the end of the year and had major surgery. So we know that they're rehabbing. JOK had a foot injury. It was a Cincinnati game too, week 13. Then went on IR and missed the rest of the year. So you just didn't know what it was because the Browns didn't talk much about it. It didn't seem that big a deal. But Kevin Stefanski said that he did not have surgery, but he's still rehabbing from it. So we're talking that game was December 11th. So this is 5 months since then, and he's still rehabbing the foot. So I think that just bears watching. There's no reason, he didn't have surgery, so there's no reason to believe that this is going to be a major factor this year. But I think it's just, okay, do we see him on the field in May or June? Let's get an update from JOK at some point and see how that foot is doing.
Sure. Any other injuries?
No, those are the ones that stood out to me. Yeah.
You brought up Stefanski a couple times here. He obviously spoke with the media. What were the big headlines coming out of him? I can't imagine, you know, I didn't read the whole thing. I didn't watch the whole thing. I saw a couple things here and there on Twitter. But I didn't go ahead and read it because I knew you'd update me, and it probably wouldn't be that long of an update.
Yeah, I don't have a ton for you there, Chet. I mean, he was fine about, you know, he was fine on Amari Cooper. He's fine on Deshaun Watson. You know, if I had like one thing that stuck in my head was, you know, I think he was asked about the message he gives, right? The team returns. What's your message? And he said, it's April. We don't play for a long time. It's not the time for any Newt Rockne speech. Right. So I think it's just a matter of going about your business. They're installing the offense. Yes, the offense will change because of Deshaun Watson's skill set. We don't know how much it'll change yet. They don't know how much it'll change yet. It's just the beginning of all of that. So, yeah, I don't think Kevin Stefanski made a headline, not in my mind, at least.
Yeah, I pretty much figured that there wasn't, once I saw the major headline was their goal is to win the Super Bowl, just like all 32 teams. I'm like, all right, yep, I'm done.
Exactly. I mean, he didn't, like, and, you know, he did say that. But he said it with everybody has that same goal, right? He didn't come out and say, you know, oh, my gosh, our goal is to win the Super Bowl. And obviously it is. But, yeah, there was not much there, which is typical of Kevin Stefanski.
Yeah, and to be honest, I'm just being a little hard on him because what do you expect him to say? And what do you really – I don't know. I mean, you're probably not going to get a lot of headlines out of a head coach in April, you know, especially as they're preparing for the draft and everything.
Especially not with his personality, right? Some guys, right, like a Rex Ryan will probably give you something, but this is not the time Kevin Stefanski is going to give you something.
But he did talk about Perrion Winfrey, though, and what do we know about this situation? Because that is a big headline coming out of the offseason.
Yeah, it is. And first of all, from a player perspective, right, this is a guy they drafted in the fourth round last year. I had a lot of hope for. Probably they might still have a lot of hope. That situation is still playing itself out. We're taping this Friday morning. We're scheduled to talk to Andrew Berry, the GM, a little bit later. And I, you know, I'm going to ask him or somebody, it's on my list of questions. If I don't ask him, somebody else will, about Winfrey. You know, do they still plan to keep him? What's the situation there? You know, is there a chance that they cut him? Which I think is reasonable to ask given his situation, which we'll get into. But I don't expect Andrew Berry to divulge a whole lot either. But the point being that they liked Perrion Winfrey, right? People remember a year ago during the draft, he had this great interview. He's barking, super excited, has a ton of energy, right? I think he's the type of defensive tackle that fits what Jim Schwartz wants to do. He's an attacking guy. He's not the biggest guy. He's athletic. He can, you know, get into the backfield, penetrate the backfield from his tackle spot. But last year had maturity issues, was benched for the Jets game in week two. Later on, he was inactive a couple times. So there were certainly maturity issues. So fast forward, I think last week, 2 weeks ago, it was like April 10th, I want to say, gets arrested in Texas is facing charges for a misdemeanor of an assault misdemeanor. And it's a woman he was dating accused him of grabbing her arm and pulling her. And there's not, you know, so it's a misdemeanor charge, but because it's a woman he was dating, it falls under the family umbrella. But it's not just that, right? In the complaint is, you know, he also tracked her, like put a, I don't know, like a tracking device, I think it was in her car, went after her again at a different time. She says this was not the first time something like this happened. He was told he had to undergo a mental health evaluation. So it's serious. You know, at least the allegations are serious. It's a bad look for him. It's a bad look for the organization, you know, especially following in the footsteps of everything that the Browns took on with the Deshaun Watson by trading for Deshaun Watson when he faced all his civil lawsuits and civil in the accusations there. So I think it bears watching, Chud, to see how this develops, because yes, the Browns have hopes for Perrion Winfrey. But he's not a guy, in my estimation, that they're going to keep no matter what, right? Like, they're, you know, how that scale works, right? Your talent and how much a team is willing to put up with. I don't know how much leeway the team will give him. So I checked the other day. The next court date is set for June 1st, I want to say. So we'll have to see how it plays out, see if these charges stick, see if he winds up going to court, how that plays out. But, you know, it's not something the Browns wanted to see. And given Winfrey's immaturity issues last year, I think it's maybe one extra level of troubling, right? The allegations in themselves, the assault charge is serious enough. And then you put it on how he was as a rookie. And I think you have to think hard about what to do with him as an organization.
Yeah. Speaking of guys that, maybe can get away with stuff or, are on a different level than other guys, our old friend OBJ. that's another, since we've last.
Yeah.
That's another story that's in the headlines since we last talked. Baltimore Ravens.
No doubt. Yeah, now, you know, OBJ, he's a fascinating guy, right? We could talk for hours about him. Now, all his drama, or a great...
We have.
Right, we have. You're right. Right. A large percentage of his drama is... Like, he's not a criminal, right? Like, I'm not saying Winfrey's a criminal. But, right, guys have those kind of serious off-the-field things. Now, Odell had the thing on the plane. But, you know, mostly he's been... Fine. Like, that's not it. But he creates this other drama outside of that, right? I just wanted to make that distinction because it's a little different, or maybe it's a lot different, but there's still always something going on with Odell. I don't know about you, Chud, but I was stunned that the Ravens, really any team, but the Ravens are the team that did it, gave him $15 million guaranteed. The guy didn't play last year. He's coming off two ACLs in the same knee. He talked about playing with the Rams without an ACL, and I think that only means that the ACL isn't intact. I don't think the ACL, like, magically disappears from your knee. But, you know, he played, and then in the Super Bowl, it finally, the knee gave, and then he had to have surgery again. So he's 30 years old, hasn't played in a year, coming off two knee surgeries, and wasn't that productive before then, right? We know the issues he had with Baker Mayfield. In 2019, it took to the last game for him to get 1,000 yards. He's been dealing with injuries. He's been dealing with a lot of stuff for a long time now. We're talking, 4 or 5 years since Odell's been Odell. And for the Ravens to pay $15 million, I know they have a desperate need at receiver. I know that they're trying to entice Lamar Jackson to come back, right, and figure out a way to make that contract work. But it feels like a desperation move to me.
Yeah, I totally agree. I was stunned by the amount of money, but, we'll see if it works out for him. I got three questions left. You good for that?
Yep.
All right, here we go. Three more to go. One of them is the stadium, no longer First Energy Stadium.
Yeah.
That's gone. And also, there's just been so much talk about the city and the Haslams and what's going to happen with the stadium. What are you thinking there?
Yeah, the naming rights thing is interesting. I think it's going to be temporary as Cleveland Browns Stadium. I know that the team's looking for a new sponsor. If that happens before the season, I don't know. But it's not going to be forever be called Cleveland Browns Stadium. I know that. And then as far as the future, it's really interesting, Chud. And there are some dominoes that are starting to fall. I know there's a report, Daryl Ryder was the first that I saw it, about the state budget approving, I think it was $62 million. Or not approving, it was in the budget proposal. $62 million for part of that lakefront development, right, which – the Haslams talked about it for a long time. Politicians have talked about it for a long time. The land bridge over Route 2 and turning that area into something more than just the stadium, right? Whether it's residential or business, there needs to be more there, more activity, draw people down to that area, right? Because the lakefront is underutilized, right? We all know that. It's been talked about forever. So it feels like there's momentum toward actually something getting done. Now, it's years away. It's a huge process. It's huge money. There has to be agreement with the city and the county and all of that. But at least that's something to watch. Now, I don't want to get into too much because a lot of things have to come together for this to happen. But the stadium is part of that. And the lease runs through 2028. And, you know, the Haslams talked at the league meetings how they want to renovate. And it's going to be huge renovations. The plan is to do it on site with the stadium as it is, but huge renovations to the stadium. They believe it will be part of that bigger lakefront development as opposed to building a new stadium on a different site. That's not the plan right now. It would be more expensive. The Haslam said, you know, where are we going to come up with that money? Meaning, you know, not just them, but the whole city. So the plan right now is to just have major renovations to the stadium. Now, there's a report out there this week that it would cause the Browns to play elsewhere for whatever, two or three seasons because the renovations would be so extensive. I've been told that's not true, that the plan is always to play the games at the stadium while the renovations are going on. Miami is an example that I've had cited to me as they did that. They renovated, I don't know what the stadium's called now, it was Hard Rock Stadium for a while, but the stadium where the Dolphins play underwent significant renovations, but they always were able to play there. And
yeah,
that's the plan now. I suppose that could change at some point, but I don't think that's something for fans to be concerned about. They plan to play on the lakefront. It's just a matter of how long do these renovations take? How much do they cost? How extensive are they? Do they fit into a bigger city county plan? Right? There's a lot of big questions. But I would not be, if I were a fan, I would not be worried about the Browns moving their regular season games. That's not something I'd be worried about right now.
Yeah, we reported that as well over at Channel 3. Yep. And when I first heard that, my first thought was, I just can't imagine 3 years. I mean, you know, listen, this is to a much different degree, but we lost our team for 3 years. You know, that's a totally different scenario. But, I mean, people live and die by going and tailgating and going to these games here in Cleveland. I just can't imagine 3 years of taking that away from the fans. That's the first thing that crossed my mind. No way.
No, you're exactly right. And I think the Browns are well aware of that. I'm sure the Haslams are well aware of that. That's a very real thing. So, yeah, every time I've talked to anybody about this, it's huge renovations. Yeah. The stadium's going to look a lot different. It might even look like a new stadium, but they're going to play football there.
Yeah, maybe a couple games thing is though, in order to get a huge crowd, you know, you'd have to go to Columbus. But the one thought was like in an emergency case, like, you know, we've seen COVID and different things. Like in an emergency case, maybe you could play at the Hall of Fame Stadium, but where else could you play around here? That wouldn't be a far drive, right?
No, yeah, Canton Stadium isn't that big. Yeah, it's
well, right.
To me, it feels like you have to go to Columbus. I just don't think, and who knows, stuff changes, but that just doesn't seem, it just doesn't seem like a viable alternative.
But you think that they'll get another naming right for the stadium?
Yeah, I have no doubt that they will. It's just a matter of when and who it is and how much they're paying, you know?
Yeah. So I have two more things for you and then we're out. I don't want to end on this note, but I do want to bring it up real quick because what a sad story with Chris Smith.
Oh, yeah. I'm glad you did bring it up, Chud, because, the first things that come to my mind are the tragedy before his death at 31 this week, the tragedy where his girlfriend died in the, she was on the highway. He blew out a tire. They're standing to the side of the road and they get hit, or she gets hit and dies a month after giving birth to their baby, right? Like, I remember where I was when I heard about it. I remember talking to Chris about it, and it was terrible, right? The baby girl loses her mom a month after she's born. Now she loses her dad, so it just compounds the grief in the tragicness of the situation. But I don't want to talk about Chris without talking about what a just a friendly guy, just the energy that he had. Felt like he was always smiling. He connected with guys throughout the locker room. He connected with media. He was a great guy to talk to. I know teammates love him. If you're on social media this week, just seeing former teammates that he touched, because he was in a lot of different places. Yeah. Seeing teammates he touched around the league talk about what he meant. Baker Mayfield had a really nice post about him. So, yeah, it was terrible news. Miles Garrett said, you know, I don't know if he said disbelief. You know, disbelief, devastating. It's terrible that he's gone as young as he is.
Just terrible. You said it well there. I did see a lot of the athletes and former Browns players or whoever going out. But, I saw you had also mentioned some things on there. And just thinking back to your right, the tragedy that encompasses the entire story is very painful to watch happen. So, well, thanks for talking about that. That was tough, Scott. But let's end on this note. I had mentioned at the very beginning, we kind of talked about the draft, and we'll talk more about the draft next week. But just make it quick. You don't have to go in depth here. But I guess maybe what in the next week people should be kind of watching for, and it's very difficult. There's no way you can pinpoint who the player will be in the third round at that pick. But maybe, you know, do you think they'll go wide receiver, defensive line? What do you think will be the main position there to look at in the third round? I'm starting to get tired here.
Yeah,
I'm running out of gas.
That's good. We got to go pretty soon anyway. No, I hear you. It's so tough though, Chud, because I want to say defensive line, right? I feel they're still short at defensive end, right? They have Garrett, they have Oboe, Alex Wright and Isaiah Thomas from a year ago. But I feel like they need to add another person. Now, maybe that's a veteran guy that comes in because they're pretty young at that position. D-tackle, especially with the Winfrey uncertainty. You know, you have Tomlinson, you have Jordan Elliott, Tommy Togiai, Ben Stille, you know, Maurice Hurst Jr., Tristan Hill. So they have numbers there, but I'm not sure right now. You know, right now, Elliott would be the second starter next to Tomlinson. But I could also see him getting younger at that spot. So I would want to say D-tackle, but it's so hard when you're not picking till 74, right? And last year, I don't think they went in saying they're going to draft a cornerback with their first pick in the third round. But yet they took Martin Emerson Jr. because he was high on their board. It's a premium position. So, you know, if I had to bet, I'd probably say D-line, although I think linebacker could be the first pick because I feel like they need a healthy young guy there to go along with all the injuries that we talked about earlier, all the injured guys that we talked about earlier. So I think it'll be somebody from the front seven of the defense, but I don't want to say that too strongly because if you're not picking the 74, you have to be so flexible. But I'd be stunned if they don't come out of the draft with a linebacker, two defensive linemen, and a receiver, right? Like, I feel like those are four spots that they're almost certain to address. It just depends where in those eight picks that those positions are addressed.
Linebacker, two defensive linemen, and a wide receiver?
Yeah, I don't want to say that in stone, but I feel like those are the positions that jump out to me. Now, you could throw safety in there, too. They're light at safety, and we'll talk about this more next week, Chud, but I think it's fascinating. Like, they don't need eight rookies on the roster, right? And they have eight draft picks. And I think Andrew Bayer will try to move around the draft. So maybe he trades up from 74 if there's a guy that falls. Maybe he trades a fourth rounder this year for a third rounder next year. He's done that in the past. I think he wants to stockpile more picks in the future. Having said all that, you can still look around this roster and say, well, they're light here. They could add another running back. So I think it's going to be interesting to watch just how many picks they wind up making. And then you start to forecast, okay, well, I can see that guy making the roster. I can see that guy making the roster. So while I think they'll take a receiver, maybe they don't because of Elijah Moore and Marquise Goodwin.
Sure. All right, we'll talk more about it next week. But I got to tell you, as you saw there, I was struggling towards the end. I'm exhausted. I was up at 2:30. Oh. I already did 2-hour show this morning, and now this. I need a nap so I can be ready for game 3, Cavs and Knicks tonight. Scott.
No kidding. I'm looking forward to that. Well, I do appreciate you fighting through. I did want to mention. I want to mention one last thing. I did, you know, I'm working on some draft stories because there's still not the buzz, but there's still the draft. It's still a big deal. I did one about BW cornerback Anthony Kendall. So you can see it at ChronicleT.com. Maybe I'll link to it on BrownZone.com as well. But he's, you know, BW Division III. That doesn't feel like an NFL pipeline. But he's really athletic. He found his way into some pro days and opened some NFL eyes. He said he's had a lot of conversations with the Browns. Other teams are showing interest. I don't expect him to be drafted, but he could be signed right after the draft or at least get a tryout in a rookie camp. And he ran a 4.4, jumped 39.5 inches, broad jumped 11.1, put up 225 on the bench 21 times. So he's got the physical traits, and now the NFL is aware of him, and I think it's kind of an interesting story. So Anthony Kendall, and I'll have some draft features over the, you know, from here until the draft, I'll probably have, you know, 3 or 4 more of those. So
BW?
Yeah, BW. Yep. He's from Florida, but came to BW. Yeah.
I love BW. Did a story on their women's basketball team last year. My daughter takes guitar lessons there.
Oh,
that's a fantastic school.
Sherry Hare is a BW coach. Back in the day before I was on the Browns, I covered some BW basketball with Sherry.
There you go. Yeah. I did a feature on them last year. Fantastic program.
Yeah.
Very nice.
So I wanted to mention that. Thank you, Chud. Again, go get some sleep. Thanks, everybody, for listening. This has been another episode of the Zone Coverage Podcast, and you can read all my work at brownzone.com. Thanks a lot.